Blog Talk Radio.
Our community have become toxic waste. And those in high places are planning to remove the toxic waste. And while we flitter and live this frivolous, foolish life, seeking pleasure from our bodies and pleasure from the bodies of others, and seeking to be famous and wealthy in this world, to be used by the power to make our people think that if you go to school and work hard, you too can be successful. That's a lie. I don't give a damn how many of you go to school and work hard. They select a few out of the mass to deceive the rest that this house is not your house. And you are going to have to think about a house of your own, because white America, listen to me good, man, cannot support you any longer. White America cannot give jobs to her millions of unemployed, much less ours. Did you hear me? Elijah Muhammad told us in the 60s we should pool our resources and get farmland, because there is no freedom without land. You remember those teachings? He said that the time of separation had come, and that we are going to have to think about building a nation of our own. You, in the 60s, you were ready to say it's nation time. You don't say that no more, because you have been deceived into thinking that inclusion into this is your salvation. This that you want to be included in has no future. None.
Greetings and assalamu alaikum. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Time to Leave Blog Talk Radio Show. Tonight we have a special show. Our Time to Leave member, Sister Majida Muhammad, is hosting a very special guest, and I'm going to let Sister Majida introduce her guest to you. Sister Majida, are you there? Well, alaikum salam, ma'am.
Yes, sir. We're getting right into it, I see. Yes, sir. Praise be to Allah. I just want to say, you know, real quick, when I listened to the intro with the minister, you know, we've been on the show now for, what, 2 years, a little over 2 years. And with everything that's going on in the world now, and listening to the minister, is just, it's amazing just how timeless and timely his words are. I was listening, and I just wanted to say that.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. Well, let's get started. Is our guest on, Brother Carlton?
Yes,
do you recognize your number?
Melissa,
okay.
Sister Melissa, if you can press the 1 on your telephone dial, and I will open your mic.
And then I'll go ahead and introduce our sister.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes. So we have a show. We promise it's going to be a very informative show tonight. If you're listening, and you may want to have your pen and your pad ready to take some of these valuable notes and tips that I'm sure our sister is going to share with you. So we're going to be talking about gaining control of our finances in order to build community. And let me go ahead and introduce Sister Melissa Muhammad. Sister Melissa is a registered member of the Nation of Islam at Bahamut Mosque No. 4 in Washington, D.C. She teaches classes on relationships and finance and is a faculty member of the Nation of Islam Marriage Retreat. Her passion is personal finance based on the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Her goal is to create 10,000 millionaire families. Praise be to Allah. Personally, Sister Melissa is an professionally, Sister Melissa is an international tax attorney who specializes in helping international businesses operate worldwide. For 20 years, she has lived and worked in different countries focused on the taxation of multinational businesses. Sister Melissa has worked in the international divisions of the National Tax Agency of Japan in Tokyo, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, in Paris, France, and the Internal Revenue Service in Washington, D.C. She travels to numerous countries and has trained tax officials in over 153 nations. Sister Melissa is married to Brother Albert Muhammad, and they are blessed to be the proud parents of three wonderful children. Welcome, Sister Melissa.
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam. Walaikum salam. Thank you.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, ma'am.
How are you?
I'm fine by Allah's grace, sister, and yourself?
I'm well by the grace of Allah. And hearing that intro, oh my goodness, I'm more on fire right now. I'm right with you.
That's you. Yes, ma'am. Well, if you want, we can go ahead and get right into it. And let me just say, you know, when I was reading it, you know, Sister Melissa, you know, your bio, it's, you know, it's words on paper, one, and it's a few lines. But when you think about the work, Sister, my God, may Allah continue to be pleased with your efforts. That's awesome. That's awesome, Sister. So let's just get right into it, Sister Melissa. I know on one of your recent workshops, you talked about how eye-opening and transformative it was to your thinking to hear the Honorable Minister Farrakhan speak at Savior's Day 2013 on how we became a nation of consumers and the laws that drove us to fast spending. Can you share with us how Black people became fast spenders?
Yes, ma'am. First, let me greet everyone in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. I bear witness there's no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his messenger. And I'm so happy, grateful, and thankful for Master Farad Muhammad, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And in their names, I greet everyone in the universe of peace. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am.
So if everybody could take a pen out, this is an interesting lecture that I have dissected from the minister. I don't know how many times. And at the time, my family and I were living in Tokyo, and we came to the States to go to that Savior's Day lecture. And at that time, it blew my mind. But ever since, you know, 2013, that entire lecture has just really been the basis of our freedom journey and to do for self. So in that lecture, the minister talks about how we became consumers and fast spenders, and he lays out a very interesting timeline. So he talks about from slavery was from 1555 until 1863, in which you have the Emancipation Proclamation. So I want everybody to write down 1863 for the Emancipation Proclamation. And then you have 2 years later, the 13th Amendment in 1865, which is also the year that the 13th Amendment was passed, right? So and the Emancipation Proclamation didn't free all the slaves, just the slaves in the North. And what he talks about is how in 1865, not only was the 13th Amendment passed, but also Jim Crow laws were put into place. And he discusses how under Jim Crow laws, we became fast spenders. And what I found so fascinating about these, the process of this timeline, was from 1865 until 1965, 100 years, Black people lived under the regime that I'm about to tell you about. So the minister said, he talked about how during that time when Black people were quote-unquote freed, the way Black people started the freedom process was they were met with laws that made it illegal to sell Black people houses. So that was number one. Then it was illegal for Black people to own businesses. And he outlined how it was forbidden for Black people to sell any of their own farm products or any type of products without the written permission of white people. And he discusses how Black business was criminalized. And the view under the Jim Crow laws was that money in the hands of Black people was a weapon of mass white destruction. And so once they, you couldn't buy a house, you couldn't own a business. Then he outlined how there was no justice in the legal system because the testimony of Black people was not accepted unless it was corroborated by a white person. So even if Black people had problems, they couldn't go to the court system to get justice. And he also laid out how if Black people tried to save or invest money, it was confiscated. So that a white person, a white man could come into your home, take your cotton, your corn, your wife, your daughter, anything of value, money that you had in your home, it could be confiscated. And also he talked about the Freedmen's Bank, which was also opened in 1865, where Black people opened up 480,000 accounts over the 9-year period that it was open. And white people confiscated every dime out of the bank wow. from Black people. So when you look at how Black people started the process of being quote-unquote free in this country, home ownership was not an option. Saving was not an option. Investing was not an option. Business ownership was not an option. So Black people were specifically boxed into spending their money to become consumers. And the minister talks about how the logical response to these types of laws was that we learned this habit from slavery and from the Jim Crow era so that you can get a return on some of the money that you earn. You would spend up all of the money. You would spend up everything before someone would come to your home and confiscate or take what you had. So isn't that, it's so interesting to me that the mind right. of these people what is to actually box you in to do what I call the dollar two-step, where you get $1 in one hand and they take $2 out of the other hand. And so now today, we continue to have that same practice. And you know what's even more fascinating, Sister Majida, when I looked at this timeline that the minister laid out, it's 2020, and the Civil Rights Act, quote unquote, that ended this era of Jim Crow laws, ended in 1965. That means that it has only been 55 years since Black people have been from under that regime. And who has taught us how to spend our money other than the messenger? Who has invested in us to do for self other than the messenger? And
right.
so it was just quite eye-opening for me to see that we're not under an illusion. If you think that this is what the thought process was during that time, and in 2020, you should be crystal clear that there is no love for us in this time.
Right.
Other than to see how you can put $1 in one hand and take $2 out of the other.
And when you think about the 55 years, when you think about, time, in one sense, that's not a lot of time, for people to have, without any training, turn that thinking around so that they can become prosperous.
Exactly. And that's the thing. The minister says that this is a learned behavior from our experience in slavery and the sharecropping. And so when you look at the messenger comes in and with his teaching, he teaches us the exact opposite way. That money in the hands of Black people is a tool of mass reconstruction. That's what
right.
he focuses us on. And one of the many reasons that he is so powerful in transforming lives is that the Jim Crow process taught us to be fast spenders, and the messenger teaches us to be prudent spenders.
And I can see in that also, just listening to you, Sister Melissa, share that valuable information. It as long as we're close to him and he's in opposition of what we're being taught, it's like swimming uphill or swimming upstream, so to speak.
It is, but I think that we have to be in the vanguard position of our mind and our money. And that's one of the things I talked about in the last training that I did, because we have to unhook ourselves from the matrix. And especially with the time that we're living in right now, if you're not crystal clear on who is who and what's what, you're going to be lost for a very, very long time. And so,
yes, ma'am. And how do we do that, Sister Melissa? How do we get into the vanguard position of our money, especially like you say, with all these predatory lending and new plantation payday loans? If you can share with us, how do we get into that position?
Well, the first step in our process of civilization is knowledge, right? So you have to, which is the acquisition of information, and you have to put yourself in a position to know that you have to start to learn how to handle your money. It's a very interesting concept, and I love to hear Minister Ava talk about how the slave mentality, I want to make sure I do it justice, this is a paraphrase, the slave mentality that life is going to be easy, that in the sweet by and by, it's going to be easy. So that concept, that slave mind concept, lulls you into sleep that you are inclined to look for ease.
Right.
When nature is counter to that, because in anything in nature, you have to go through steps of difficulty in order to get there. And so, if you take as an example, because the messenger tells us to look at nature, if you look at a seed that is planted in the ground, when the seed goes down into the ground, the seed is in total darkness. There is no light. You can't see anything. But the seed doesn't sit there and just stay still. The seed, there's an intelligence in the seed that causes the seed to reach out for all the nutrients that it needs to draw it unto itself. And when that seed draws those nutrients to itself, before it sends a shoot up, it sends a root down. And the root goes down to make the tree strong. And when that seed enters into a cooperative agreement with the living God, there is nothing, I mean there is nothing, that will stand between that tree and what Allah has in store for it. And that tree is going to see the light. You can put concrete on top of that seed. You can put a building on top of that seed. It doesn't matter what the opposition is. That seed is going to find its way to the light. And that's the way that we have to be in striving for getting to Master Farad Muhammad, the messenger and the minister. Because, look, we may be living in a place of darkness right now because we're in this pandemic, though I think that we should be very happy that we're in the ark. But
yes, ma'am.
If you're in that kind of a place, if it's financially, if it's in a relationship, if it's with your child, if it's with your parent, if it's at work, when you enter into a cooperative relationship with the law and you get rid of the slave mentality that things are going to be easy, that is the first trap that you have that's going to hold you back. The messenger frees us from that. Because when you read in the Holy Quran, I love Surah 90, the city, and it talks about, I want to make sure I get this right. It says, and certainly, this is what's so interesting, and certainly we created man to face difficulties. That's the thing that's so interesting. After difficulty comes ease. And it feels ease before the difficulty. No, that's not the way it is in life. So I say all of that to say that I think that one of the greatest traps that we have to get out of is thinking that it should be easy in running your own business. It should be easy in separating. It should be easy in doing for self. It should be easy in your marriage, easy with your children. That's what slaves think. But people who are striving for freedom know you have to overcome difficulty, that there are obstacles in the way. Obstacles are just an opportunity for you to get stronger, for you to get better, for you to flex your muscles and to overcome. And then when we set our mind to be okay with overcoming challenges, then you can set yourself on a course for cleaning up your financial life and putting yourself in a financial position so that you don't have to go through these economic challenges that other people are experiencing.
That's a lot right there, sister. That's a lot right there. Just thinking about the analogy you gave and where we are and how we are. That's really interesting. When you said, you don't care, you know. And you're right, because then you're not focused on whether something is easy or something is hard. Your mind is on, one, that the promise is true, the victory is promised, and it's true, and you do what needs to be done.
Exactly.
You're not concerned with whether it's easy or it's hard so much, but that it needs to be done.
Exactly.
It needs to be.
And one of my personal calling cards is, you know, whenever I want to do something, the messenger says, you in the blueprint, you find 6 to 8 people that have the knowledge and experience, two key words, knowledge and experience, in the area that you want to be in. So I always interview, I always talk to 10 people. Doesn't matter what it is that I want to do, In that same area, he tells you to go out and seek. Now, that was a key word for me. Seek their advice. He says, don't be ashamed to seek their advice and their guidance.
Right.
And so, because knowledge is the acquisition of information, wisdom is the experience of information, which is the second stage of our civilization process. So he's telling us to find people with knowledge and experience. And when you go out and you interview other people who have done what you want to do, then you get to leverage their wisdom, right?
Mm.
And everybody's not going to give you the same pretty rosy story. Again, get beyond that mindset of people hating on me, people downing my idea. 3 people are going to give you a good version. 3 people are going to give you a bad version. And 4 people are going to be in between. And the great thing with the messenger's teaching is that you take all of that information and you distill it through what he shows you into a fine mist so that it comes back into your life so that you can take it and implement it to achieve what it is you're trying to do. So when I go through this process, my calling card has become, if somebody tell me it's never been done, that means that's my card. That means I'm supposed to do it. You know, that's how.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. That kind of sounds like, you know, Dr. Ridgely, if we have an idea or a mindset to do a thing, or we have an idea, we bring an idea, you bring that idea, you bring the work to support it. You know, you're not just throwing it out there for somebody else to do the work. You got to be willing to do the work.
Exactly. And so
yes, ma'am.
And when I'm talking about being in the vanguard position of your mind, the payday loans is an example of looking for ease. You know, I know that we all go through difficulty. And we learn that we love the devil because the devil gives us nothing. And there are many ways that he gives us nothing. Credit cards are a big way that he gives us nothing. Because why should I pay you three times the value of something? Because that's the two-step. I'm giving you $1. It's $1 in my hand, and I'm going to pay you $3 for it by the time I put it on a credit card. Why should I finance a car and pay three times the amount for it, and you decide that it's going to drop 30% in value when I drive off the lot? That's something for nothing. Why should I pay for something with your name on it? Because it's Gucci or Louis, or what are you giving me in exchange for that? Absolutely nothing. Why should I pay for cable 5, 6, 7, 800 channels when I'm working most of the time? I'm not going to look at all those channels. And why should I give you something for nothing? And it's the same thing with payday loans. You know, personal finance fascinates me. And I always lay the messenger's teachings on it when I travel to other countries, because I've just become increasingly convinced that what we teach is just the way to be successful. And every country I go to, I'm so fascinated. So I interview people, I talk to people, colleagues, different people about, you know, money and how they spend and, you know, the different things that they do. And when people tell you when you travel, your mind becomes so open, because things in America that I thought that were so normal, like a credit card, you know, being 20%, 25%, it wasn't until I moved to other countries that found that most people on the planet don't have a credit card, and in many countries you can't even get one. So payday loans was a very interesting one for me, because in our community, payday loans has become the new plantation. This is another way that you love the devil and he gives you nothing. Because in America, payday loans are the new way that people are trying to survive. When the majority of our people cannot get loans at a bank and they're behind on their bills and they're having difficulty, they go to these vultures and they end up robbing our people. And I'm going to share some examples like I did in the training, but just a few. You know, one of the big kickers that floored me was that there are more payday lenders in America than there are McDonald's. Now, it's twice as many payday lenders in America as there are McDonald's. And the amount of interest on a payday loan, when I initially saw these numbers, I thought, okay, I must not be calculating something right, or these numbers must mean something very different from what I'm reading. Because in America, the average payday loan is between 391% to 1,409% interest.
Wow.
In Canada, right now, during the pandemic, the Canadian people who have payday loans are being charged up to 780% interest.
Wow.
In Mexico, they're paying 1,500% interest. And the typical credit card in Mexico is 23%. And the UK, so I don't know if you remember from the last training, but I wanted to prove my point, so we went on YouTube. And I had the class to look on YouTube to look at these different advertisements and videos that showed actually what the percentage rate was on in the UK. You remember that, Sister Majida?
That's ridiculous. What was it, 2,000 to as much as 5,000, I believe?
Up to 5,853%. Now, if you listening to this and you scratching your head trying to figure this out, so was I. And it fascinated me. So let me giving you a
just make up numbers.
Okay. So professionally, what I do is I analyze companies and I analyze multinational corporations, literally from stem to stern. I will go to a country, say like Singapore. I will teach them how to take a multinational. Now, let me say, I don't know anything about domestic tax returns. I can't do my own tax return. I know nothing about that. But when you put me in the international arena, that's my game. So I will teach them how to take the company, analyze every department in the company, the invoices, building the general ledger. So I will look at companies that oftentimes they have interest, they have credit cards, they may have insurance, they have these complicated formulas of how they do derivatives or financial transactions or credit default swaps. I mean, in 20 years, I don't know of a financial transaction that I have not looked at. And I'm telling you, when I looked at these numbers, I was like, what do you mean 5,853%? How is that mathematically possible? So I sat down with somebody in the UK. I was like, look, you got to really explain this to me. I can't get it. And what he explained to me is that that number is the equivalent of what we would say is 20%. It's not the way you calculate the 5,853%. Right. Is the same way you would calculate 22% interest on a credit card. They don't mean the same, but the same way I'm saying if in the States I said I'm paying 22% on this loan or 22% on this credit card is the same way they're saying I'm paying 5,853% on this loan. Isn't that crazy?
I can't even imagine how that's the same. the numbers are so far apart. I don't even know how you get to that much interest calculation. I can't even imagine the formula.
And what is so sad is that it's poor people. That's what makes me angry. That's what makes me angry is that it's poor people. People who have some level of financial intelligence would not sign on to this.
Right.
The thing that is so key, first of all, we've all made financial mistakes. None of us are perfect. Nobody. I know I've made financial mistakes. You know, nobody is perfect. Anybody
Same
tells
here.
You that, that they're perfect, you need to pick up your bag and run.
Sam. Or look at what they've accomplished and have amassed, see if it bears up.
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is that, so it doesn't matter about education, background, this hits, you know, the teacher, the doctor, the lawyer, I've seen people across the gamut. I mean, the person that's working at McDonald's, everybody has gotten caught up in the payday. And that's why, I'm sounding the alarm to say this is a new plantation because people get trapped in there and they can't get out. You know, it literally is enslavement.
Maybe go in, like you say, for a need, you know, food, clothing, shelter, have a need, a rightful need, and, you know, maybe COVID and not working or falling down on their you know, just falling down in life for a moment, thinking that they can go into these institutions, go in, get a little and come out, and then, like you said, just stuck.
Exactly. But, you know, the messenger gives you a way out. You know, he gives, and that's one of the things I wanted to share. I know we're at the, I think we're at the halfway mark, but.
Okay,
I
yes,
wanted,
ma'am. Brother Carlton, could you,
yes, ma'am.
Do we have any callers?
Callers, that's your cue. If you are stimulated by this conversation and or you have comments or questions, press the 1 on your telephone or your keypad, and we will announce your presence and allow you to join the conversation. Sister Majida, as for now, we are still awaiting for listeners. So, hey,
well,
guess what?
We have listeners. We're waiting for some callers.
I'm sorry.
Okay, yes.
We have a caller now. We got two callers. Callers.
Okay, go ahead, caller.
2619. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes. Assalamu alaikum. This is Brother William calling from Georgia.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother William. How are you, sir? You have a question or a question for Sister Melissa?
I do have a question. And thank you so much, Sister Melissa, for this valuable information. My question is, my undergraduate degree was in financial counseling and planning. And when I came out, there was a company called Primerica, which was one of the first companies that I worked for or under at that beginning point. And what I came to realize, and as you said, we've all made the financial mistakes, but I saw with the financial education or training that I received that I had been duped, and I didn't want to dupe other people into a market and a scheme, which is how I look at the stock market and those kind of money market activities. How do we go about helping people to recognize that something like the stock market, which they say is not able to be rigged, but truly is a rigged system of having $1 in your hand, as you pointed out, but then them taking 2 or 3 from you?
Yes, sir. You know, so first, Brother William, thank you for the question. And second, some people will imply that because you have that mindset that you, quote unquote, don't have the sophistication, but you have the sophistication to see the scheme. So I don't think that it's an either or situation. I think that step one is to follow what the messenger said. People are going to invest in, if, you know, you have that, their 401k, their TSP, their 403b, and they're going to make investments in the stock market, and you can make money. There is no doubt about that. But one of the key things that the minister talked about in the same lecture 2013, he says we cannot go to our people with the same mindset as our former slave master.
Mm.
You have to go to our people with the mindset of a servant. And so if you are serving people, I would suggest you start where the messenger starts. He says that his number one issue is our knowledge of self, the others, and the time should force us to become more prudent in our spending. See, and people will tell you, you listen to people talk about, savers are losers and inflation and, you know, if you save money and you're not getting a great return. Look, we are undoing 400 years of torture. And what he's telling us to do, it doesn't have to be about the numerical aspect of it. What he is teaching us is to move away from being a fast spender. And one of the ways he's telling us to do that is to be more prudent in our spending. And when you read the economic blueprint and the sound economic plan number one, sound economic plan number two, and message to the black man, he continuously talks about saving, saving, saving. I counted the number of times, Brother William, that he said that. So I would encourage you that as you go to talk to the believers, start where he starts. They may not be able to receive what you're saying about the stock market because they may have learned something quite different. But if you start where he starts and tell our people to take that step, he's not going to mislead you, because once you can get us to the point where we don't live on 110 or 120% of what we earn, where we're not using credit cards to buy groceries and clothes and shoes and all that kind of stuff, you have to teach us to live within our means. And so I think that if you lock on what he's saying and take the same steps that he's laying out, then our people will start to open up, and then eventually you probably will be able to share your thoughts with them about your thoughts about the stock market.
Yes, ma'am. And just as a quick follow-up, I was so disheartened by and didn't have the heart to lure people into some kind of market security, so-called security, and that could have been their life savings. And just because I knew the loophole that, well, I told them the risk and if they lose their savings, all of those things, because people don't look at, well, you work for Schwab or you work for Merrill Lynch and they told me to say it. They look at me and say, why did you do this to me? And so I left that career. Initially, I went and began working with my hands as a electrician, and now I'm a physician. But I would just encourage people to look at when, if they choose to go into 401ks and trading stocks, that you have to be precise in when you decide that you will be able to withdraw, because my opinion is the market is monitored, and whether it's on an individual level, you can believe that or not, that when they determine that you may be ready to capitalize on the gain, that's when there's a downturn in those particular companies that you may have your money in, and you won't be able to capitalize on those gains.
Yes, sir. And when you should have a financial advisor or financial planner as a part of your team, which is one of the things that, you know, I talk about in terms of your own 3-year economic plan, and you plan that over time. And then you and your spouse, you know, have to, you know, go through all the steps of your tolerance and all those different levels for what you want to get. But all of that, Brother William, starts with having a plan. And the same way I talk about talking to 10 people, if you go into anything, the messenger encourages, that's why the first step of our process of civilization is knowledge. You have to go out and educate yourself, because what got us into this situation that we're in before, you have a great education on top of poor morals. That's this country. Great education topped with poor morals. And what the minister is telling us is that we should have great morals supported by great education.
Turn that thing around.
Well, thank you very much for your question, Brother William.
Thank you, Brother William.
We are going to move on to the next caller. Caller with the last 4 digits, 1502. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Assalamu alaikum. This is Brother Dwayne from Peoria, Illinois.
Wa alaikum salam.
Sister, that was powerful. Assalamu alaikum, sister. That was powerful. I just have one question for you, sister. You were saying something about how you was trying to get like 10,000 families to reach 100,000. I was just like, is there like some type of class course that you do or some type of website to go to or anything like that?
Okay, I'm going to come hunt you down. I'm going to send my husband to hunt you down. Listen, yes and no, because I teach these classes at the mosque and I teach them at the marriage retreat. And I am getting to the point now where I'm going, because I work with, we work with families, my husband and I should say, one-on-one, but we're really going to have to expand this mission and work with more families. So we have to find a way to do that. So if you stay connected to Sister Majida, my husband and I are currently talking about how we can expand that to reach our 10,000 families.
Praise be to Allah. Yes, ma'am. Yes,
ma'am.
Thank you, brother. It's definitely needed. Because when we talk about it and we go into our next area of discussion, you know, when we talk about building community, if we can't get control of our finances in the way that we need to, you know, how do we make these things possible? So you talked about the new plantation system, Melissa. How do we cut these cords? How do we get ourselves entangled from Satan's world and start developing a plan for ourselves? If you can share that with us.
So I think that following the Sound Economic Blueprint, the Sound Economic Plan 1 and 2, and the 3-year economic blueprint will get us there if we apply that to ourselves as an individual or family unit. Don't look outside to say just outside of the community, but within your own household, you start to think in a way that is in a 3-year period. The messenger says that 5 years would be better, but he says we don't have the patience to do the 5-year plan. And he lists out countries where they've done the 5-year plan. And you can actually go on. I looked on the internet at the countries that he listed, and I looked at their 5-year plan. So my first suggestion is that once you get to the point where you become comfortable with that things are going to be challenging and difficult, and that's just life. Right? No, nothing special about you. It's just life, and you just accept it. And especially if you're married, if you're going to have to accept that your spouse is not you, and you're not your spouse, and it's okay. It really is. Because, if both of y'all are the same, somebody don't need to be in that relationship.
Right.
It's just not the way that Allah has created the universe, because growth comes through agitation. And so 9 times out of 10, you're going to marry somebody who has and the minister talks about, you know, in the courtship process, he lists out, he says, you list the qualities that you have and the ones that you're missing. And then in your spouse, you're looking for the pieces that you're missing. So, you know, I'm impatient. Oh, okay, I need somebody that's more patient than me, you know, that kind of thing. But when you go through that process, I think the next step is to have a team mentality. And you have to work as a team. You know, in all the businesses that I've ever looked at, it doesn't matter what country I've been in, all of them work from the team aspect. Every single one. I've never seen an individual company, and I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm just saying in my 20 years of doing this business, and I've never seen an individual company be successful. So you and your spouse, or you and your family, your children, your husband, your parent, whomever, develop the mindset of a team. And then when you come together as a team, then you start to pool your resources, like the messenger says, and you pool your time and your talent. Like one of the things that as a part of these 10,000 families that I want to do is create what I call economic families. And these economic families are 6 to 8 families that have a similar knowledge and interest in a particular area. Like the messenger talks about the grocery store business. But if you form and pool economic families where you have 6 to 8 families come together, then whatever the business is or whatever the idea is, then you can leverage your knowledge and your money in order to start to build for yourself. So it would look something like this. You as a family first decide things are going to be rough, and that's fine. Step 2, decide to work as a team, partner, pool, unify. I think our way is so great. Like, we go out in teams, we do assignments in teams, and what's so beautiful about our way is sometimes you partner with somebody you can't stand.
Look at the law, that agitation you talked about.
What?
The sandpaper in the wood.
Okay. And then so I know my captain, she'll put you, if you and somebody else have a conflict, she'll put you together on purpose. And,
yes, ma'am.
And
work it out.
And that's the beauty of it, because, you know, in the church, they get upset and they leave and they go and form another church. In the nation, we don't have that option. And I always say, as long as your name is Muhammad and my name is Muhammad and both of our names are in front of this building, Muhammad's mosque number, whatever, we just going to have to fight it out.
Look, because that's both our house. Look.
It's the same thing with your spouse. It's the same with your spouse. It's the same with your children. It's the same with your whomever is the person that you want to deal with. It's the exact same, is my point. You know, but I'm making it funny, but I'm just saying you have to grow, because you go to work and you work as a team with people at your job to produce a deal for somebody else's world. You won't even come home and meet with your husband or your wife or meet with your children about, or, you know, meet with your sister or your mom or your dad or your aunt, whomever. You won't even meet with them about building for yourself. And you go to the mosque and you meet with other people. You meet with the captain and the lieutenant and you building. But what about your household? What about building for you? So I think that applying this 3-year economic plan to yourself is what is going to make the huge difference. And then after you get to that point, I encourage people to come up with their own financial code. And the financial code is the code of conduct that's going to be there no matter what. I mean, and the code is not based on how you feel. Nobody cares about your feelings. The code is based on the principles of how you live your life. So you don't have to worry about being rich. You don't have to worry about having money, because your habits, your practice, your code of conduct, your ethics and your morals is such that there's no other result than for you to be financially wealthy.
Wow. And we have a caller. This is a good time to bring our caller on.
Yes, go ahead, brother.
Okay, caller with the last 4 digits, 7769. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Look at this. Thank you, Lord, Muhammad, thank Lord. I come like this. I love him.
Wa
alaikum salam. Wa alaikum
salam, Dolores. Yes, ma'am. I just want to say something. But what her name? What's the sister's name? She would talk about finance and everything. What's her name?
Sister Melissa.
Sister Melissa. Nice to hear you. If you right, then you are right. I have to learn, too. Every time you look around, I put the money, CD. And then I put the money up for my grandson, $1,000 in there. And then I went back. It was $1,700 in there, right? And
yes,
then I take $1,700. They keep it $700, and I take $1,000. But you're not going to get no interest. None of it. I don't care what you save your money. IRS or saving account, bank account, saving account, they can't fold out every month. That's why I stopped doing it. You know, that's how they make money. Right. You're not going to get no interest. They're going to get the interest back. That's what they do. But you do still love.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Dolores.
Yes, ma'am. You got
to. Okay.
Any other
callers? 5 minutes. That's the last caller for now. We're down to the last 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. Sister Melissa, is there anything you want to share with us in the last few minutes of the call? And then if you want to let listeners know how they can get in touch with you. I know you said right now you all are working on increasing your families, and, you know, you're going to keep in touch with me as you do that, and I'll let our listening audience know if that's the route. So anything else you want to share with us, Sister Melissa?
Yes, my closing comments would be about a suggested financial code. First, number one, always give in charity. Always give in charity. And if you should strive for at least 10%, but always give in charity. Two, always pay yourself at least 10%. The messenger says pay yourself first. And you save 10% of what you earn. Three, never lie. Never lie. The minister tells us to stop lying, stop lying, stop lying. Great morals topped with great financial habits equals the new wealth. Four, avoid debt. Five, never, never, never live on more than you earn. Always live on no more than 50 to 70% of your net income. If you set that in place, you're not going to have to worry about money. Number six, invest for the long term. Number seven, meet as a team about money at least once a month. Number eight, hold a financial summit once a year. And at that one time in the year, I don't care where you got to go, if you go to the coffee house, to the hotel, wherever, but you, even if you're single and by yourself, you go develop your three-year economic plan once a year. My husband and I do it on our anniversary every year. And you work on your three-year economic plan. And then nine, which is the number of completion, make sure that your children learn, this is key, how to build businesses that are pleasing to Allah, create jobs for our people, and serve our community. And that's
it. Right. Praise be to Allah. Praise be to Allah. Thank you. Thank you so much, sister. I know we're going to have to put your show on replay. Sister, thank you. I'm really humbled and I'm really honored that you took the time to share this valuable information with us. And I want to have you back again when it's convenient for you. When it's convenient for you. Yes, ma'am. Thank you, sister.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Yes, ma'am.
Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone.
Down to Peachtree. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes.
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain by brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. He said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth and he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Allow me to drink some more. He said, what I am searching for are the answers.
always